be aware that I'm here in my personal capacity, and all opinions I express are my own and not in representation of either the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of Personnel Management, or the Presidential Management Fellows Program. Make sure everybody knows that I'm here personally. So to start off with the application process, I mean, the place to go is to go to the PMF website. And I captured this screenshot yesterday about, you know, program and application overview. But just so you know, if you have friends that went through it last year or the year before, it looks like they've done some fairly dramatic changes. And as of yesterday or the day before, they weren't yet captured on the website. And so I had an in, and a friend gave me a presentation that included all the changes, so I've tried to get them here to the best of my knowledge, but they should be up on the website soon. Yared says they're up now.
Yared's up now.
They weren't up yesterday.
They're up last night.
So the first thing you do is you apply, and so you have to go into USA Jobs and create that USA Jobs resume. And then you also go in and upload a copy of your resume yourself, like a PDF or a Word document. And that deadline is the 15th, is that right? 12th?
The 15th, this Friday.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did I miss something? The deadline?
Yes.
This Friday.
So that's your portion of the stuff that you have to get done by this Friday, and then you have a couple more weeks in which to get the nomination form to Yared's office, and then Yared takes care of signing that and sending it off. But these deadlines are absolutely hard deadlines, so you don't want to miss them. You can submit your stuff up to the last minute, that doesn't make a difference, but if your nomination form doesn't get there on time, forget it. Mid-January to February is what they have out this year as far as when they'll be doing the written assessment. And I actually need to look at this information for it. So in November, so you'll submit your application, Yared will submit his nomination form. In November to December, you'll receive an email confirming that you're eligible for the program. And I think the main component of eligibility is that you are a U.S. citizen, because most of the positions, I mean, it's, you know, federal service, so most of the positions are for U.S. citizens only. And in that email, you will also receive notification of having to take the test. And this year, it used to be, like last year, I was supposed to take the test in D.C., and I injured myself, and I had to reschedule it, and I was supposed to take it in D.C. again. And I showed up the second time, and I forgot my wallet. So then I had to reschedule it again, and I ended up taking it in Durham, North Carolina, on the last day in the last testing slot. Apparently this year they're moving to an online model where once you get that email, you have 1 week in which to take the test unproctored online. And the components of the test have changed as well. In mid-January to February is when they is when you do the actual test. And so this year you don't have to worry about stuff like running out of slots. And also the test is done in, sorry, this has changed so much. The test is done in November and December, and then semifinalists, and I couldn't find out what it was that makes you a semifinalist, but semifinalists are invited to take a day-long oral assessment. And in mid-January to February, you find out whether or not you are a finalist. And so in March, they announced the finalists. Sorry if I've got these dates really wrong. And the job fair, which is not actually a required component of the program, takes place in March or April. It changes from year to year. Last year, it was in March.
So semifinalists, just to clarify, so semifinalists is whoever has submitted an application, and the law school has, you know, made its nomination. Your semifinalist prepared to take this.
Yeah, that's new this year too, I think. I don't remember.
Just verbiage. Yeah. Lingo that they added. Sorry, didn't mean to.
Oh no, that's fine. And so, as far as I'm aware, the law school isn't super selective about who it'll nominate.
I'll talk about the nomination.
Okay, but and I'll let Yared talk about that. Okay, so the written assessment. Again, this is new, so I don't know a whole lot about it. It's between, I believe, 3 to 4 hours. You take it online at your own computer, and you have a week to take it after getting the email notification that you need to take it. So this is different from last year. And it's still a three-part test, but the three parts are different. And the information that I have is that there's a situational judgment component, and that requires applicants to indicate how they would respond in a given situation. There is a life experience component, which requires applicants to respond to questions regarding their training, experience, education, and life history. And then there's also a writing sample, which requires applicants to write an essay in response to a prompt or target topic. We didn't have to write anything last year. It was a 3-part multiple choice test. There was a pretty big personality assessment component. And if you've ever taken a Myers-Briggs test, it was kind of like that. I'd imagine that parts of the situational judgment and life experience test are going to be similar. So they're going to be asking you questions like, when you're in a group, you know, what kind of role do you take? When you're stressed out, how do you respond? Do you multitask well, or do you need to focus? And then this one came up over and over and over again, and I cannot give you the right answer, but I'm sure Lauren can help me remember. There's a couple of choices, and just use your best judgment when you choose. But they'll keep asking you, what is it that motivates you, in a couple different ways. And the multiple choices last year were like fame and recognition, money, the work should be interesting, or you want to help people and make a difference. That's right. That's how it actually worked. And so, you know, keep in mind that you're taking this test to enter the Federal Civil Service. The oral assessment, this is totally new this year, so I really can't tell you much about it. This is all the information I have. It's a day-long assessment. You'll get invited to it. You'll have to do individual presentations. There will be group activities, and then there will be a proctored writing exercise. I'm sure OPM, once they get the site up and running, will have a little bit more detail about it. And they also put out sample questions, at least for the written assessment they have in the past. So I'm assuming that they'll give you at least some idea of what it is that you'll be expected to do at the oral assessment. I hope, for your sake. So finalists are notified in early March, and soon after you get notified, the agencies are notified as well, and pretty much as soon as you become a finalist, you can get online access to the jobs database. In my case last year, and this may be different this year, I don't know, apparently my name went up on the website, but it was about a week before I got an email. So I had an email from Jared and another friend saying congratulations, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And so, you know, sometimes there can be gaps like that. So if your name goes up on the website, you're almost guaranteed to be a finalist and you don't have to worry. None of the jobs listed will be attorney positions, and that's for a technical HR reason. When you become a PMF, you are part of the accepted service. And so that means that after your 2-year fellowship is over, you can convert to a permanent position and you don't have to compete for it. All government attorney positions that are actual attorney positions are also part of the accepted service. And so for some conflict between that, none of the PMF positions are attorney specific, which isn't to say that there aren't jobs that are a great fit for an attorney. So once you become a finalist, you'll find out when the job fair is, and it takes place in late March to early April in the DC Convention Center. So it's this huge room, and it's like a tent city, where they have all these little booths set up that are separated by curtains. And what you want to do is you want to keep a regular eye on the job listings as soon as you become a finalist and start applying to stuff early. And in the 2 to 3 weeks leading up to the job fair, the postings really start to, you know, exponentially multiply. And so I unfortunately was not able to do this because I was out having knee surgery, but it's a very good tactic to go in there as soon as you see jobs posted that you're interested in, to go in there to send out your resume and cover letter to the listed contact, and if they find you interesting, they will set up an interview with you at the job fair ahead of time, which is the most efficient way to do it. And it's also the most efficient way to make sure that the positions you're applying for are the kinds of things you're actually interested in. And so you want to scope out the jobs and send out the cover letters as soon as possible in terms of when jobs get posted. The sooner the better, because although I don't think anybody officially says this, a lot of agencies basically won't look at new resumes at the job fair, or they stop looking at new resumes a week before the job fair because they fill up their interview spots. So my Harry Potter constant vigilance is about that. And so the interviews themselves at the job fair, they can be really informal and chaotic. I mean, I had interviews that were done in these little curtained booths. I had ones that were done at tables in the middle of the chaos. I had ones that were done at the display tables themselves. I am very easily distracted by moving things and people and noises, so at times it was very difficult for me to focus. So you have to keep that in mind. Not all employers actually post their jobs online prior to the job fair. And so those are employers that you can walk up to and talk to and give them a resume. And most of the time they will be doing interviews on site. So in terms of, it's a two-day job fair and you want to use some strategy, because even employers that will have lined up interviews in advance will still be taking walk-up interviews at the job fair if they have slots. And employers that haven't posted in advance but know that they have the availability will be doing job fair or interviews on the spot. So the strategy to use, and I did this kind of unintentionally because I was overwhelmed and I didn't know what else to do, and it worked really well, is spend the morning of the first day, you know, walking around, scoping out the agencies, dropping off your resume, and just walk up, drop off your resume, and flat out ask, are you guys doing walk-up interviews? And if they are, sign up. Because those interviews will basically, they run out of them. So they'll close out by probably the middle of the first day. And by the second day, a lot of agencies actually leave. And even if they have interview spots that were available for the second day, they'll have been filled up in the first day. After the job fair, I mean, it goes without saying, follow up with whoever you interviewed with, especially if you're very interested in the job. You have to be pretty vigilant about remembering to ask for either business cards or email addresses, because they don't always remember to give them to you. It's not like an OGI interview where they're set up there and they have their card out for you and you just need to pick it up. So, you know, send out thank you emails, and please, please, I've actually seen some of these come through in a non-PMF setting, but make sure things are spelled correctly and that your grammar is correct, and you don't say, hey, Jonah, instead of dear Mr. Sierwinski. Also keep an eye on the jobs database, because jobs will continue to go up online after their job fair. From the time you're selected as a finalist, you have 12 months in which to try to line up a job. And so I basically had zero luck at the job fair. I had some things kind of pan out that were looking promising, but then hiring freezes and whatnot. I saw the posting for my job go up the Wednesday after graduation. I sent off my resume that Wednesday. They invited me to come in for an interview that Friday after graduation. And then I ended up starting on June 21st. It worked out really well because I really needed the job and I really like what I'm doing. But the one drawback to that is I am taking the February bar. My office has been really cool about it because I told them ahead of time that, hey, if I'm starting in June, I'm going to be taking the bar in February. So they've already promised me some of the perks that come with working for the federal government, like starting after Thanksgiving, I can go down to 4-day weeks. It's a compressed work week. So instead of 5 8-hour days, which I actually don't only work 8-hour days anyway, it's 4 10-hour days. And then after New Year's, it'll be, you know, one day of telecommuting from home, 3 days in the office, and then one day off. So there is a lot of, you have some room to negotiate, but it's a lot better if you do it before the process. And another thing that I didn't know going into it that I'm now trying to get done, and it's happening, but it's a lot slower. If you are interested in loan forgiveness, which I imagine you would be, and most agencies have some sort of loan forgiveness program, you want to try to negotiate that before you accept your offer. When you get your offer letter, especially if you have prior work experience, if they have you in there as GS-9, you want to try to change that, and that might mean reworking your resume. And I'll get back to the resumes later, because there are some specific things you can do to make your resume really federal government friendly. So offers, almost every time they'll start out unofficial. You'll go to the interview, you'll hear back from the person you interviewed a day or two later saying, we have recommended you for this position. But the offer is not official until you get either the email or the letter from HR, and it has to be from HR. The length of the process can vary greatly by agency and department and phase of the moon. I managed to go from interview to offer in about 10 working days, which is practically unheard of. I know people for whom it took months. So you have to be pretty persistent with HR. Find out who the HR contact is. You know, start with your PMF coordinator at that agency or at that department, and then stay in touch with them and see if they'll actually put, I mean, at VA we call it operational HR. See if they'll put you in touch with operational HR so you can be able to call them and keep an eye on things. Because what happens is there are some kind of hurdles that they have to go through for PMF that are sort of from legislative hurdles. They have to clear all veterans, because if a veteran applies for the job, they get veterans preference and they have to be considered for it. And then they have to have a really good reason to turn that veteran down and hire somebody else. So they have to go through a lot of that paperwork. And some agencies, for example, I had an unofficial offer from DHS, and I didn't hear anything from them for like 3 months. I kept trying to follow up with HR. They wouldn't return my calls or answer my emails. And then finally, the woman who I'd interviewed with got in touch with me to tell me that they'd been on a hiring freeze. But sometimes it's hard to find that out, and government HR can just be this big black hole. So, you know, once you have that offer, the sooner you're in touch with HR and the more proactive you are, the better it is. So here's my little story. I accepted an offer from the Office of the Secretary at Veterans Affairs, and I interviewed for the job, like I said, the Friday after graduation, and I started working on June 21st. My official position description is management analyst. Don't ask me how that's different from a program analyst, because I don't know that it really is. And the brief job description is I work full-time on what's called the VA Innovation Initiative. We call it VAI2, and our goal is to accelerate innovations in support of VA transformation. Since Secretary Shinseki became the Secretary of the VA, and here's an interesting tidbit. Secretary Shinseki's daughter is married to Tim Heafy, who is the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Virginia, and also a UVA alum. And you'll see them around town sometimes if you know what they look like. They have three really cute little kids. But anyway, Secretary Shinseki, I believe, is a West Point alum and did not go to UVA law. But when he came on board, one of his biggest things was making the VA a 21st century organization. A lot of things at the VA from the healthcare side and the benefits like GI Bill side are still done completely by paper. And it is very difficult. You just get tons of forms and, you know, you have people coming back from, especially now, from what we call OIF, OEF, Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, and here, have this stack of forms, and when you're done spending the 2 weeks it takes you to fill that out, we'll take a couple months to process them, and then maybe you'll be able to get your GI funds. And the care side, the medical care side, we will see anybody, like we will see a veteran whether or not their stuff is processed, and if there's any question about eligibility, we will go ahead and care for them until that's settled. But the benefit side can take a long time. And even on the medical side, claims can sometimes take a long time to be processed. The care will take place very quickly, but then there's, you know, months of backlog on claims. So here's a little slide about what is VAI2. I don't know if you, for me, it looks really small from here. And so the purpose is to identify and apply innovations to help transform the VA into this 21st century agency, and this is Secretary Shinseki's initiative, and it's a VA flagship initiative for open government, which is, I think it's an Obama administration initiative where the government should be open and people should be able to see and know what's going on and what the agencies are doing. So everything we do is transparent, and although you might have to dig for it, you can usually find it online. In terms of process, there's this little sentence, but basically what we do is we run industry and employee competitions where we'll identify problem areas. Like two of the ones that I'm working on now are dialysis and adverse drug events. And those are areas that are both have a high impact on patient care and, you know, length of life and stuff like that, but it also has a high cost impact for the VA, especially the dialysis, because we farm out a lot of it and it's very expensive. So we turned to industry and we said, you know, give us your best ideas for dialysis solutions, or give us your best ideas for how to prevent adverse drug events, or at least how to kind of track what patients might be at risk for those. And so we have gotten hundreds of proposals, and we go through and evaluate them and decide whether or not to fund them by going through a couple of layers of review. And the focus is the secretary has, I think it's 16 greatest challenges that are fairly closely aligned with our topics as well. I don't know all 16 offhand. I think that's a lot of challenges for one agency. But, you know, they're very legit. And actually, I've been really impressed with how passionate the secretary is. I mean, one of the things that he cares about a lot is homelessness. So that was another one of our initiatives. And, you know, he says that veterans, it's a disproportionate number of veterans who are homeless and have mental illness. And that's something that we should be helping them with, that people who've served don't deserve to be living on the streets without proper mental health care. So I thought I'd talk real quick about other non-attorney options at VA that might still be a good fit for an attorney. And these are across all federal agencies will have these positions. I just asked around the VA. Contracting work, it's, you know, it's various procurements and contracting, and when you have to do government contracts where you're either buying or selling or arranging for services, somebody has to write those contracts, and that's what contracting specialists and contracting officers do. personally, I don't think it's the most exciting work, but if you think corporate law is exciting, it might be perfect for you. Privacy officer, I don't know about if all agencies have this one actually, but at the VA, privacy is a big deal because we're dealing with healthcare stuff and we're dealing with a lot of very personal information. If anybody has any background or knows people in the military, almost everything is based off of your social security record or social security number. So if you get that number, you can find a lot of stuff. And there's also been issues of lost laptops and patient data being compromised and stuff. So privacy officers work with enforcing HIPAA and enforcing the Privacy Act. And so what they do is they kind of educate the workforce, and then they help interpret the policies. So people go, if you're a privacy officer, somebody will come to you with a question and say, I want to do this, or so-and-so is asking for this information. Am I allowed to give it to them? And you have to figure out whether or not they can. And so you're enforcing, and you're kind of, you know, helping define the policy, and you're helping other people act within accordance of HIPAA and the Privacy Act and VA policy. Information security officer, this is a little bit more on the IT side in terms of information security. I had a little bit of a hard time understanding the real difference between privacy and information security. So what information security officers do is make sure that databases, anything that contains information about patients, that's kept safe. Now, that doesn't mean it's an IT job, because it isn't, but there's a lot of VA policies in place to help protect veterans, including medical doctors can't communicate by email about any patient data. Only certain people can actually access the patient data system that we have. And so, and then a lot of times in terms of when things go into publication or when people ask questions, it's like, well, can I tell them that? Or is that protected? And that's what information security does. And it also deals with stuff like, is the information on that website okay to have up there? So again, it's sort of like a privacy officer in the role. You have to know the rules. You have to know both the federal statute rules. You have to know the VA policy. You have to be able to tell people about it and interpret them for people who are absolutely not lawyers and don't want to be and just want you to give them an answer. And then the final is management and or program analyst. You'll see a lot of jobs listed as management analyst or program analyst or management and program analyst. These jobs are all over the place. Sometimes people use these jobs as a workaround for government HR, where it can take up to a year to bring somebody in, whereas PMF can often go a lot faster if the HR is efficient. So you might not be coming into the most exciting role. If you interview for these types of positions, you really need to ask them, you know, what is it that I would be doing on a daily basis? Would it amount to, you can't ask them this, but you need to evaluate, you know, would it amount to doing clerical work? Does it amount to doing substantive work? Will you get an actual management role in anything? Or are you always going to be support staff? And then the other thing that I asked at every interview was whether or not they were looking for somebody to stay long term after 2 years. I mean, they have to have a full-time permanent position for you to convert to, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're truly looking for somebody who's going to stay long term and that there's a space for you in that organization after your 2 years is done. And most agencies will say yes for this, but there have been some that I interviewed with that said, no, we're really looking for somebody to do this for 2 years and then move on to something else. To a certain extent, my job is like that. After my 2-year fellowship, I won't be working on the VA Innovation Initiative anymore, but I would still be working. I'm technically employed by the Veterans Health Administration, and I'm detailed to the Office of the Secretary, and I would still be physically working in the same place, but just on different things. And so what I like best about my job is I really feel like I get to do work that really positively impacts veterans. And my daily work, I can see that. Like with a dialysis project we're running, we now have about 1,000 veterans enrolled in sort of a pilot test where they're getting much better care than they were before. The VA's mission, and this is all over the VA, it's written on the front of the building, you'll see it all the time, is to care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan by serving and honoring the men and women who are America's veterans. And this last quote I put on there because, have any of you guys ever been into a VA medical center for any reason? Did you see a lot of them have the signs above the information desk that says, the price of freedom is visible here? And every time I see that sign, it's like a sucker punch to the gut, because inevitably in the waiting area, you will see somebody who's about 19 and has had his legs blown off, and you will see somebody who stormed the beaches at Normandy and can no longer feed themselves. And it's really sad. They're getting great care at the VA, but you really look around and you see the price of freedom is visible here. And that, you know, I actually have that on a post-it note above my desk. But I've been really surprised by just how dedicated VA staff are. I mean, the mission, we take the mission really seriously. And because we're the VA, we still use a lot of military-like terms. Like, I have a daily tour of duty, not work hours. But, you know, so our mission is to serve those who serve the country. And you will see people going above and beyond their technical job descriptions to do that. And that's really important. And it's just a really dedicated workforce. I mean, especially when you're talking about physicians and lawyers and those kinds of professions, they're not going to work for the VA for the money. Like, I'm not at the VA for the money. So if you're working there, you know, it means you really want to be there. And it's really kind of the exception to find somebody who's not nice or who's not helpful. In fact, when I first started, I was getting processed, and I was getting all these emails from all these different people about different forms I had to fill out. It was kind of a little overwhelming because every last one of them would have something in there about, congratulations and welcome to the VA, it's so nice to have you. And I'm like, who are you? I don't know you, why are you being so nice? And I certainly didn't get that at the law firm I summered at, where it was just like, here's the information you need, show up at 8 a.m. on this day. So that's about it for me. Here's my email address if you have any questions.